paused to address the cats, who were yanking her in opposite directions. If dogs can do this, why is it such a challenge for you two? She turned her attention back to the police. But it's time. More than time. Well, we're going to swing by tomorrow, keep an eye on things. No lead on the person who carved that word. But with the eggs and people just generally riled and the cut down, Sandy shrugged. Couldn't hurt to have us keep an eye on things. Thanks, Francesca said. Not necessary, but I appreciate it. Lewis and Clark caught a glimpse of Bongo and lunged for my trunk. Whoa, you crazy felines, Francesca cried, reining them in. They hissed at Bongo. She spread her wings menacingly and let out her most ferocious caw. Lewis and Clark retreated for the safety of Francesca's arms. Once again, she was a tangled knot of leashes and cats. Sandy smiled. Maybe leave the cats home tomorrow, Francesca. Chapter 43. That afternoon, I met my executioners. Not having teeth, I've never really understood the fear people seem to have of dentists. I've overheard conversations where the words root canal and cavity were used, but in tree world those have different meanings. After seeing the tree cutters and their equipment, I understood. When a truck carrying powerful chainsaws, along with something ominously called a stump grinder, shows up, well, you know you're in trouble. Mind you, an arborist is a great friend to trees. We need our limbs trimmed just the way you need to cut your fingernails and hair, although for us it's only once or twice a year, and it's called pruning. I always feel especially elegant after a good pruning. But pruning is usually done with special shears that look like giant scissors, or with a small saw on a long pole. Stump grinders are generally not part of the plan. It didn't help when three men wearing orange hard hats went to Francesca's door and announced they were from Timber Terminator's tree service. "I'm going to make a deposit on those silly hats," Bongo muttered. "No, Bongo," I said, although the idea was tempting. "Let's wait and see what's what. Maybe they're just here for some pruning." "You really are an optimist." Francesca walked the men over, this time without Lewis and Clark, and they discussed costs and timing. That's right. They talked about cutting me down, even as they enjoyed the shade from my lovely limbs. Talk about insensitive. One of the men, he introduced himself as Dave, climbed a ladder to inspect my hollows. Agnes, Harry Spiders, and Big U eyed him warily, ready to defend their babies. "You've got some critters here, ma'am," he reported. "Yes, yes, I know," Francesca said. "Every year like clockwork." Bongo flew up to a spot near Agnes. "Just one deposit," she said under her breath. "That's all I'm saying."
"Situation like this, we generally advise cutting in late fall, less likely to disturb any nests."
"I've got that covered." Francesca nodded, hands on hips. "Animals and birds hightail it out of here every May 1st. Wishing day, you know." Dave scratched his stubbly chin.
"Wishing day?"
"People make wishes, put them on the tree. Animals and birds don't like all the noise. If you could do this tomorrow afternoon, the timing would be perfect. You work on Saturdays?"
"Sure do."
Dave shook his head.
"Wishing day," he murmured. "Now I've heard everything."
Francesca nodded. She patted my trunk. "Yeah, craziness. Can't believe I've put up with it as long as I have." Chapter 44. Early that evening, Francesca stopped by the blue and green houses. My houses. One with a black door, one with a brown door, one with a yellow mailbox, one with a red mailbox. She knocked on each door. She explained her plans for me. Both sets of parents said they understood. They would be sorry to see me go, but it would be a relief to see an end to Wishing Day, wouldn't it? And my absence would mean more sunlight in their living rooms and fewer acorns underfoot. Okay, at least let me make a deposit on the parents, Bongo grumbled. More sunlight? The nerve! How about less oxygen, people, less beauty? Thank you for defending me, Bongo, I said. But no depositing. Samar and Stephen were not so understanding. They ran after Francesca as she crossed the lawn. Samar pulled on her sweater. You have to listen to us, Samar said. You can't cut down the tree. I can't? Francesca inquired. And why is that, dear? Because, Stephen said, panting, it's alive. I'm quite aware of that, Francesca said. It's a common trait of trees. She paused, peering down at the ribbon around Samar's neck. Why, I know that key, she said. I recognize the ribbon. A crow gave it to me. No kidding. Smart birds, crows. Samar slipped the ribbon over her head and handed the key to Francesca. Oh, I don't want that old thing, she said, giving it back. You can keep it. It just made me remember. It's not important. It opens a diary. My great-great-grandmother Maeve kept a journal after she moved here. So that's what it's for, Samar said. Where is it? Stephen said. The journal. Attic, maybe. Or no, it's probably in the shed behind Samar's house. Got a lot of old family stuff stashed away in there. She gave a wry smile. Unless it all floated away. Backyard's pretty wet right now. Which, by the way, is one of the reasons it's time for this tree to say goodbye. Samar wiped away tears. You don't understand. This tree, it's almost like it's human. That's sweet. Francesca patted Samar's head. But honey, it's just a tree. She squared her shoulders. Now I must go feed Lewis and Clark. I can hear them complaining from all the way over here, and I've got a busy day ahead of me tomorrow. As she moved to leave, Stephen stepped in front of her. Before you go, he said, his voice firm, just listen. He turned to me. Say something, he instructed. Please, tree, Samar pleaded. I kept silent. What more was there to say? Francesca looked from Stephen to Samar and back again. Children, she said, perhaps those video games you like to play have addled your brains. Talk, tree, Stephen said. Silence. It can talk, Samar told Francesca. Real words. It told us a story about Maeve. Francesca, for just a moment, hesitated. She looked at me. You mean metaphorically, of course. The tree seemed to talk to you. The leaves whispered and so on. It told us about the hollow and the baby. Francesca blinked. The baby? Yes, Samar said. The abandoned baby. Again, Francesca paused. Of course, I've told that family story before. You probably heard it from a neighbor. Stephen shook his head. We heard it from the tree. Oh, my, said Francesca. She waved a hand in front of her face. You're wearing me out, you two. I am so very glad my parenting days are behind me. Listen here, you get a good night's sleep, understand? Or maybe some counseling. As quickly as she could, Francesca made her way across the lawn, her shoes caked with mud. Francesca? Stephen called. It's just a tree, dears. Repeat after me. It's just a tree. I was wondering if we could look for that diary. She glanced over her shoulder. Maeve's journal? Be my guest if it's not underwater by now. She held up her palms. Just no more tree craziness, you hear? When Francesca was back in her house, Stephen and Samar looked at me accusingly. Why didn't you talk? Samar demanded.
Because it was foolish. Because I wasn't supposed to. Because. Looking defeated, Stephen and Samar trudged away. They hadn't gone far when Samar paused and turned to Stephen. "Something happened today," she said. "People at school were being weird, talking about me, whispering, passing notes even." She narrowed her eyes. "You didn't tell anyone, did you, about what happened last night?" "Of course not." "Then I wonder what was going on." "You're probably imagining things." "I don't think so. I mean, I'm used to people talking about me, being mean. But this was different."
"Things aren't always what they seem."
Stephen smiled sympathetically. "Come on, let's go check out that shed." I watched the two of them head towards Samar's backyard. They were talking, laughing, becoming friends, perhaps. Maybe I hadn't been so foolish after all. Chapter 45. Trees don't sleep, not like people do, or animals, but we do rest. Unfortunately, that night, rest eluded me. I was filled with questions about the coming day, of course. But most of all, I didn't want to miss a moment of what little life I had left. I wanted to drink in the stars. I wanted to feel the fuzzy wings of the owlets. I wanted to stretch my roots just a tiny bit farther before the night was through. I wanted to indulge in some quiet contemplation about life and love and what it all meant. I wanted to philosophize. "I've been thinking," I said to Bongo. "There's no point in my worrying about tomorrow. It will come soon enough."
"Red," Bongo said.
"Too much, wise old tree?" Bongo paused. She looked at me for a long time.
"Never," she said. "Never, ever too much, wise old tree."
Bongo settled onto home plate. The world was quiet and calm. "Want to hear a tree joke?" I asked.
"Is it funny?"
"Probably not," I admitted.
"Then probably no."
"What's a tree's least favorite month?"
"I don't know, what month?"
"September." I paused. "Because you see, red," Bongo interrupted.
"As always, no need to explain."
We didn't speak much after that. Turned out I didn't need to talk about life and love and what it all meant. It was enough to watch the sky freckled with stars, to smell the sweet, wet earth, to listen to the beating hearts of the little ones I could keep safe, at least for one more night. Chapter 46. Saturday morning dawned clean and cool. Even before the sun made itself known, the animals and owls departed the safety of my limbs. Each family had found a new home, all in nearby trees on the same block. The skunks were going to remain under their porch. It made me happy to know that everyone would be staying in the neighborhood. One by one, they nuzzled me, whispering their goodbyes. The babies sniffled, especially Harold and Rose Petal and Flashlight. The parents tried to put on brave faces, but their trembling voices gave them away. It was awful, but I was glad to get it over with. I've always hated goodbyes. Bongo, for her part, insisted on staying with me to the bitter end. I knew better than to argue with her. By 6 in the morning, Stephen and Samar were sitting together on Samar's porch. By 7, Sandy and Max had arrived. They parked across the street and sat in their cruiser, sipping coffee and eating donuts. By 8, 3 local reporters had arrived, armed with microphones and fancy equipment. They took video of the word leave. They talked about its meaning,
about how it had changed the feel of a neighborhood. They also talked about me, the doomed wish tree. I didn't like the word doomed, but I had to admit it was accurate reporting. Francesca came at 8:30, carrying a cup of tea and dragging a small wooden ladder, the one she put out every year for the wishmakers. She went back home and promptly returned with Lewis and Clark on their kitty leashes. They were not cooperative. And then the wishes began. A toddler on her dad's shoulders reaching high. An old woman, aided by two young girls. Neighbor after neighbor, many of whom I'd seen pass by over the years. Wish after wish after wish. Some on scraps of colorful fabric. Many on paper, tied with a ribbon or a string. A few socks. Two t-shirts. And one pair of underwear. At first, people came in small groups, or one by one. But then something changed. The trickle of people became a deluge. Many of them were kids from the elementary school, but there were parents and teachers, too. A dozen kids, 50, 100 and more. Every person seemed to be carrying an index card. Each card had a hole punched in it, with a piece of string looped through the hole. Stephen high-fived many of them, hugged his principal, waved to his teacher. Samar just sat on the steps with her parents, a quizzical expression on her face. One by one, the children tied their wishes to me. The principal and assistant principal and janitor and teachers all helped. My bows had never been more laden. My heart had never been more hopeful. Because as each child, as each neighbor, as each stranger, placed a wish upon me, they looked at Samar and her parents and said the same thing. Stay. Chapter 47. Within an hour, I was covered with the word stay. Extra wishes lay on the ground beneath me, piled like blossoms. Wishes made their way onto the porches, the railings, the sidewalk. After 216 rings, I thought I'd seen it all. Turns out, you're never too old to be surprised. Soon it became clear that the stay wishes had been Stephen's idea. With the help of his teacher, Stephen's whole class had secretly worked much of the previous school day making the index cards. Word spread quickly about the project. Before long, the whole school had joined in. "So this was your idea?" Samar asked Stephen. "I had a lot of help," he said. "It's a miracle we kept it a secret from you." Samar looked over at her parents. "I don't know if this will change anything," she said. Stephen looked over at his parents. "Me either." "Thank you, though," Samar said, "for trying." Stephen started to reply, but just then, the timber terminator's truck pulled up. The end of my story was coming. Well, it had been a beautiful story. How lucky was I to have seen a day like today? But Stephen and Samar weren't giving up so easily. They ran straight to Francesca, who was busy untangling her kittens, who were round around her right leg. "Please," Samar begged. "You can see how much people love the wish tree. Please don't cut it down." "Child," Francesca said firmly, "it's time." Stephen pulled something from his jacket pocket. It was a small, leather-bound journal. "So you found it," said Francesca. "In the shed?" "Yep," said Stephen, handing the worn diary to her. "It's a little damp," said Francesca. Samar pressed the key, its long ribbon dangling, into Francesca's palm. "You should read it."
"Maybe someday."
"How about now?" Stephen urged. Francesca sighed.
"You children need a hobby, you know that?"
She put the key in the silver lock, and the journal clicked open. The pages were yellow. The ink faded. Let me guess. It's about a tree that can talk.
Actually, it's about this neighborhood, Stephen said. It's about us.
Please? Samar said.
Dear, it won't change anything, Francesca said.
Please, Stephen said.
Oh, fine. Francesca rolled her eyes. Gotta wait for the tree guys to finish getting set up.
Sure, I'll glance it over. Maybe then you'll leave me in peace.
Dragging Lewis and Clark behind her, Francesca went to Samar's porch, sat on the top step, and began to read. Chapter 48. It isn't easy cutting down a big tree. It takes careful planning and people who know what they're doing. I'd seen neighboring trees cut down. I knew how things went. While Sandy and Max moved people to a safe distance, Stephen's parents watched from their porch and Samar's from theirs. Meanwhile, the tree people put ropes around my trunk and consulted with one another. A man and a woman carried over a huge chainsaw, followed by the stump grinder. The grinder looked a little like a hungry animal. Actually, it looked a lot like a hungry animal.
All those animals gone? Dave called to Francesca.
Haven't seen any, she answered. Dave climbed a ladder and peered into my hollows as well as he could. He didn't seem to notice Bongo, who was hiding deep in the owl's former home. I sat patiently, awaiting my fate, while around me the world buzzed. A huge crowd, filled with old neighbors and new friends, had gathered, it seemed, to see me off. Near the curb, some kids were making music. I don't know if it was good music, but it was most definitely loud music. I realized it was the garage band Bongo liked. The whole thing was almost like a party, a going-away party. There it was, surrounding me, my wild and tangled and colorful garden. It wasn't such a bad way to leave the world, I decided. Not bad at all. Chapter 49. Dave had a megaphone, and through it he reminded the crowd to stay behind the barriers that had been erected.
"This is a big tree, folks," he said, "and when it goes, we don't want anyone else going with it."
"Bongo," I said in a voice that only she could hear, "you need to get to a safe place. You heard him. I'm a big tree. You don't want to be in the way when I fall."
"I'm not going anywhere," she replied in a stubborn whisper. "Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. But I'm staying with you, Red, and that's final."
Dave turned to his workers.
"Okay, let's get this show on the road."
"Please, Bongo," I said, softly but urgently. The saw moved closer. I waited, expecting to hear the painful roar of the chainsaw engine. Instead, a small but intense sound filled the air, something like a puppy growl mixed with a kitten hiss. It was a baby opossum. Darting through the huge crowd across the muddy lawn, past Dave and his crew, around the massive saw, beneath the stump grinder, and finally, triumphantly up my trunk, was none other than Flashlight. He climbed straight to his former hollow and settled there, his tiny head poking out. He was panting and trembling and hiccuping, but he did not seem to be in any danger whatsoever of fainting.
"I missed you, Red," he said,
in a voice so small that only Bongo and I could hear it.
"Hold off on the saw," Dave yelled. "Some dang animal just ran up the trunk."
Bongo popped out of her hollow.
"Flash," she hissed. "You can't be here. It's dangerous. They're about to..."
"You know..."
"You're here," Flash pointed out.
Across the grass streaked hairy spiders, with her other babies trailing. She went straight to the opossum hollow, where she proceeded to scold Flash as she snuggled him close. In the sky,
little Harold suddenly appeared, frantically flapping his wings like a fuzzy butterfly. Agnes and the rest of her brood followed. They settled into their old home as if they'd never left. Bongo moved to home plate to make room for the owls. The ewes came next, trotting across the lawn. Last to join the group was the skunk family, who gathered at the base of my trunk. 7 opossums, 4 raccoons, 5 owls, and 6 skunks had waddled, scooted, dashed, and fluttered from their various homes just to see me off. My residence. My friends. The crowd was delighted. People applauded. They cheered. They laughed. Francesca, straining to get a look, accidentally let go of the kittens' leashes, allowing Lewis and Clark to escape. They ran straight to me, clambering up my trunk to join the gang. It wasn't all perfection. The babies and parents were grumbling, but softly enough that none of the humans could hear.
"Ouch!" muttered Hot Buttered Popcorn. "Your tail is in my mouth," cried one of the ewes. "You smell like skunk,"
someone complained. "I am a skunk," came the reply.
"Mom," asked Harold, "should I be afraid of a cat?"
"As a rule, yes," said Agnes, "but this is a special circumstance." One of the tree cutters took off his helmet and scratched his head.
"This just don't happen," he said to Dave. "Those animals ought to be eating each other."
"It's some kind of crazy critter miracle," said another worker.
He pulled out his smartphone.
"This is going on Facebook."
Lots of other people seemed to have the same idea. Cameras clicked away. Ignoring the barricades, the reporters dashed over, microphones extended, as if they were hoping to interview the animals. Bongo, always a bit of a ham, was happy to comply. "Chip, please," she said to the microphone waving beneath her. Dave gestured helplessly at Francesca.
"What is up with the menagerie, lady? How are we supposed to cut this tree down?"
Francesca, wiping away tears, stood. She put her arms around Stephen and Samar. Slowly, they made their way across the muddy grass. When she reached me, she pulled a bookmark from Maeve's journal before handing the book to Stephen. It was a strip of cloth made of blue-striped fabric, frayed and faded. Maeve's wish. Carefully, Francesca tied it to my lowest branch, already crowded with wishes. She stared long and hard at the animals. Lewis and Clark purred happily. The crowd quieted. The only sound was the rustling of my leaves. Finally, Francesca spoke.
"Look, I don't do speeches. That's not my way."
She patted my trunk.
"But here's the thing. Until today, I'd almost forgotten how important this old tree is to my family story. And from the look of it..."
She pointed to my residence.
"It's important to a few other families as well."
Many people smiled. A few laughed.
"I hate this word," Francesca continued, running her hand over my carved bark. "Hate it. My great-great-grandmother Maeve would have hated it just as much. Here in this neighborhood, we're better than this."
She looked over at Samar's parents.
"We don't threaten people here. We welcome them."
Francesca reached for Samar's hand.
"This tree is staying put, and I hope your family will, too."
Chapter 50. That night, many hours after the crowd had scattered, Samar slipped out the front door of the little blue house. Stephen, who'd been watching from his bedroom window, joined her moments later. They sat, silent, beneath my wish-laden boughs. The slightest breath of wind sent the index cards fluttering like huge moths. Moonlight was everywhere, it seemed. On the wishes, on my branches, on the downy-headed owlets. in the upturned gazes of Stephen and Samar. How beautiful we all were, bathed by the soft and silver light. "Do you think your family will stay here?" Stephen asked. "After everything that's happened?" "I don't know," said Samar. "I hope so." The breeze kicked up. Cards chattered. Ribbons danced. A scrap of notebook paper, loosely tied with red yarn to my lowest branch, broke free. Samar snatched it as it swooped past. She squinted at the scribbled writing. Then she stood, carefully tying the paper back onto my branch. "What was the wish for?" Stephen asked. "An invisible robot that does homework."
"Seems unlikely."
"True." Samar leaned against my trunk and smiled. "But then, so does a talking tree." Chapter 51. If this were a fairy tale, I'd tell you there was something magical about that wishing day, that the world changed and we all lived happily ever after. But this is real life, and real life, like a good garden, is messy. Some things have changed, some things haven't. Still, optimist that I am, I'm feeling hopeful about the future. Samar's parents decided not to move, at least not for a while. Stephen and Samar have become good friends. Sometimes they do their homework at the base of my trunk. Their parents still don't talk to one another. I'm not sure they ever will. The police never found the boy who carved "leave" into my trunk. But a couple of weeks ago, I saw him sauntering by. I pointed him out to Bongo. Let's just say she made a very large deposit that day. All my residents are back where they belong, safe in their hollows. They still argue sometimes, but they haven't yet eaten one another. Francesca applied to the city to make me a heritage tree. That means I'm protected forever. She's also on a first-name basis with a local plumber who's learning to deal with my pushy roots. Lewis and Clark still haven't figured out how to walk on leashes. Bongo's made a new friend. His name is Harley Davidson. I suspect we may have some crow newbies in our future. As for me, I promised Bongo I will never be a Batinsky again. I told her that my meddling days are over. And yet, here we are, you and I. What can I say? I'm more talkative than most trees. Still, if you find yourself standing near a particularly friendly-looking tree on a particularly lucky-feeling day, it can't hurt to listen up. Trees can't tell jokes, but we can certainly tell stories. This is Nancy Lanari. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wish Tree by Catherine Applegate. This program was directed by Beck Engel. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2017 by Catherine Applegate. Production copyright 2017 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.